In a landmark decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Title VII of the Civil Rights Law of 1964 does indeed protect LGBTQ people from workplace discrimination on the basis of sex.
The ruling comes as a welcome victory in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic and the fight against police violence with the Black Lives Matter protest.
Are we finally overcoming centuries of oppression, or will there be a backlash? Is this a rainbow breaking through gray clouds, or are we just in the eye of the storm?
Today, we take a look at the momentous Supreme Court ruling extending employment protections to all LGBTQ people, and Chicago's Drag March for Change, where thousands gathered to protest systemic racism in the gay neighborhood of Boys Town.
Plus, Barbara Streisand just made George Floyd's daughter a Disney shareholder.
A statue of Dolly Parton may replace a KKK leader monument at the Tennessee Capitol in Nashville.
And Chicago's Pride Parade may be canceled, but the Reclaim Pride March is on. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion, and this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you.
Become a member today at feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands of legendary podcasts. Or join us at Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Fausto, I own 51% of this company, and you're fired for being gay.
I'll see you in court.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, happy day. Freedom is ringing across the land. This is a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
So right now, we were expecting it to go 5-4 against LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court just ruled that every company, every business, anybody who hires somebody in the United States cannot fire them based on their gender identity, their sexual orientation, or their gender status.
You know, it was all outlined by President Obama when he was in office. You know, he said, like, listen, people in the government, you have to pay attention to this because this is protection in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. You can't discriminate people on the basis of sex. So I'm a gay guy, but I have sex with gay guys. So you think, like, my sex shouldn't do that, but, you know, I'm doing it. So you're discriminating against me on sex. And the same, you know, would kind of apply for trans people or lesbians. And so Obama really laid it out there, and it's been the foundation of people that have really been working towards this for a long time. Obama was a constitutional lawyer. He put it out there. But then when Trump got in office, he said, no, you don't. But it made it to the Supreme Court thanks to a couple of very important cases. Unfortunately, two of the people leading that case died long before the case even made it to the court. One of the people just died, I think, a few months ago. And, you know, a lot of people were speculating that it wouldn't go through. But in my heart, I was like, it has to go through. It's you know, they say that the arc of justice bends towards the arc of history bends towards justice. And I'm just kind of like, it has to bend that way. And especially because, you know, Obama was a brilliant lawyer and he laid out a lot of the argument for it. So it would be hard for them to go against it.
Have you ever experienced workplace discrimination you're gay?
For sure. Absolutely.
How did that manifest itself?
Well, you know, it's like you get the straight guys would get the better shifts. You know, they would have, you know, usually preferential treatment, typically.
It's not getting promoted.
Yeah, it's not getting promoted.
It's not getting paid, offered as much for the same work as other people. And in a lot of ways, you know, ironically, though, I'm wondering, like, how this will reflect on the Equal Rights Amendment, which was meant to address women in the workplace not earning the same as men do for the same work. And I'm hoping this is going to move that needle forward in that direction. Brian Sweeney, our comedian friend, said Gorsuch is now a gay icon. wrote in the statement, an employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender defies the law in a 6-3 ruling.
So the thing with Gorsuch is they actually thought that maybe he would vote against it. And because they knew that they had the votes for it, that he may have wanted to initially vote against it. But because he voted for it. He got to talk about the ruling. And if he hadn't talked about the ruling and written the ruling, then it would have gone to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so he, by him taking control of the situation, he was able to say what this encompasses. You know what I mean?
Oh, so he was able to shape its scope.
He was able to shape its
scope.
And
limit it.
Yeah. And so it's like limited or, you know, to have an idea and to make it smaller, not as sweeping, I guess, is maybe the term.
To make it more narrow, because part of this is and we talked to a lot of activists about this momentous today. Ruling, right? Mm-hmm. And legal scholars and, you know, we're like, all my friends are like, yeah, you're the 12th person to call me on the phone today, Fausto. What do you want?
We need background information. We need to know about this.
So the question was, will there be a backlash? Absolutely. Is it being done in Pride Month to make the Supreme Court look progressive than it really is? You betcha. Mm-hmm. Is this opening up the door for the Supreme Court to gut abortion rights, Roe versus Wade? Mm-hmm. You better believe
that. That was one of the main contentions, somebody said. They were just like, this is a thing that they're going to do so that they can look like they're not totally political. They're trying to make it seem as though they're apolitical. But what their big desire is to gut abortion rights. And so they're figuring, we'll give them a little bit of this, but we're going to take a lot of that.
And I think there's not an agreement and a lot of discussion on the impact of the Black Lives Matter protests mm-hmm. that are ongoing right now mm-hmm. in response to police brutality. But in the big picture, this is about injustice towards Black right. people in the United States. Mm-hmm. The Black Lives Matter movement and organizers have been very, very aggressively inclusive of LGBTQ people because they are a new generation of activists who understand intersectionality. You can't pull up the weeds of racism mm-hmm. without pulling up the weeds of systemic violence and oppression against trans people and gay people. Well, so in order to be effective, they're addressing these issues together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is definitely intersectionality there, especially because the people that founded the Black Lives Movement are queer people, mostly queer women. And so, you know, we talked to one person today who said that because we have had all these protests that may have spawned this type of
reaction
from the Supreme Court because they're taking a gauge of what the country is like. And could you imagine what this country would be like if they came out and said, yes, you can discriminate against people based on their sex in this political climate? I mean, we have protections here in Illinois. I think it's 29 states have it, or 29 states don't have these kinds of protections. But you can imagine the rallying call. And I don't think that this government would be prepared for Black Lives Matter plus LGBT people taking to the street because, you know, we don't want to be considered second class citizens.
Well, I would say that LGBT people are taking to the streets in solidarity, regardless of their racial identity or profile. Mm-hmm. They are showing their solidarity in the streets. And certainly this week and mm-hmm. Demonstrations all around the country definitely show that.
Yes, but I'm just saying it would have been even more exponential. So mm-hmm. it was like, you know, really in many ways, almost like it was a tinderbox that would be ready to explode. Now, somebody else said, like, I don't know how much, because they're not an activist. Or a friend who was an activist said that these protests really may have influenced. Somebody else said that it didn't influence that because, you know, this stuff has been working its way through the court for years and years and years. And by the time it actually reaches the Supreme Court, most of them have already read everything. You know, they're reading some new things that have come before them. You know, and even when they have these kinds of hearings and stuff like that, I think a lot of them just still have already had their minds made up.
So the lawyers are saying mostly that this is something that's been mm-hmm. set in motion about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the activists are saying this is definitely a coming in the environment that we are living mm-hmm. in right now with the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think that it's both, right? Mm-hmm. It's an interaction of these two circumstances. And I would like to say moving forward, I mean, remember when the Human Rights Campaign was arguing against including trans people in ending workplace discrimination?
Yeah,
Aunt Enda, we called it.
Oh, yeah.
And Barney Frank was saying that in order to pass workplace protection laws protecting gay people, you had to pull out trans people from that legislation because it was too big of a pill to swallow. This idea of incrementalism. And I think it's becoming more and more clear. And I think that's the kind of the reaction that a lot of young activists have today, where they're like, we don't want incrementalism. We want to push aggressively. We don't want to be senior citizens or even, you know, they see these people not living to see the consequence of their hard work.
Yeah. We want to live marriage equality. You saw the same thing.
Yeah. I want to live in a world that where everybody is respected and loved and feels safe and has a right to, not have to work a lot of hours at a difficult job, where people have free time to dream, to pursue their relationships, their creativity. And this whole idea that we have to work 40 hours a week, that's next. You better believe it. This whole
like Europe.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I was just thinking about this, like in Europe, like in the middle of the day, a lot of places just close up because people go home to take a nap. And, you know, and part of it is like we as Americans work so hard and we're treated so poorly and paid so poorly at these jobs in, you know, generations in our generation, we've not really seen wages go up.
Well, and we see all these advances in technology, but what we are seeing is we're seeing an increase in the amount of hours we're working. People in medieval times had, you know, weeks off at a time. You know, they didn't work the entire day. They worked in the morning and then they may have had the afternoon off. And so you think, you would think like over time we would learn and figure out how to work less. But for some reason, you know, the rich and powerful have made it so that it's hard for us not to work a million hours.
Well, part of that is it stems to the, it boils down to whether you have a home, you have food on the table, your lights are paid. And, you know, certainly speaking for myself, during the coronavirus pandemic, I certainly would like to work less, but it's not been an option for me. You know, now back to the Supreme Court's case ruling, you'd think that, you know, this would be somewhat, there would be a divided country with this ruling, but actually no. Republicans in a recent poll, 74% said yes, should it be illegal to employees be fired should it be illegal to for employees to be fired on the basis of sexual orientation? All Americans, 83%, Democrats, 90%. So there's still like 11% of Democrats think it should be legal to fire someone for being gay or trans.
People in America are always like, I'm king of the castle. I can do whatever I want. So they, you know, they want to be able to fire somebody for having like blonde hair. Like, I don't like the way you looked at me. You're fired. They want complete control over everything.
This does not make conversion therapies invalid or illegal. This does not address trans bathroom bills. Had probably Ruth Bader Ginsburg been able to write that decision, she may have included those those harmful realities in there, but Gorsuch actually controlling that narrative, that's one example of how they were able to not stop gay torture from happening.
It's you know, and Trump has come up and he's just kind of like, yeah, they've ruled. I've read the decision and some people were surprised, but they rule and we live with their decision. Yeah, very powerful decision, actually. They have so ruled. So he's kind of, you know, at this point in time being kind of like no big deal. But I can guarantee you at some point in time, he's going to claim this is some kind of LGBTQ victory on his part.
Well, the first gay pride parade, the first march in Chicago did take place because Republicans with the Nixon administration were putting so much scrutiny in Chicago's police that they sort of stood aside and allowed the first pride parade to take place. And I think, you know, in some ways there's, this is happening in an environment where Americans are so upset and outraged at the sexism and racism coming out of the Republican party that it's opening up the doors for this kind of legislation to happen. And I would like to see that, you know, for gay rights organizations like HRC and politicians who may have argued against trans inclusivity of those workplace discriminations, be not celebrated to some degree, you know, mm-hmm. to be like, you know, LGBTQ people owe a lot to Black Lives Matter moving forward in the future. And I would like to see that never go back to where we were, where our ability to support Black Americans mm-hmm. was in doubt. I don't want to go back to that. And I think now that this major, huge shift is moving forward, now we can work on, you know, raising the minimum wage, giving people more free time, and, you know, making healthcare education accessible to everybody.
You know, but, you know, part of me is like, yes, we have to really look at the future, and there's still a lot going on. But man, was that when you wake up, when I first saw the news of this today, it just filled my heart with so much love and hope, because we've just been living under this coronavirus pandemic has just been looming over us. And then this police violence, we're like, what kind of country are we living into? So it's like that glimmer of hope, that rainbow shining through those clouds. And you're just like, yes, we, you know, things are possible. We can move forward. And it just, you know, I'm just so happy. And I'm so glad to see so many other people happy that they can share in this dream.
Now all you guys got to do is get a job.
Right?
Lady Bunny.
Well, so, yeah. Now it's like all the people are like, move over, I'm gay, and you can't fire me now because I'm here and I'm queer and I have legal protections. Although here in Illinois, we have had those legal protections, but there's other places throughout the world. It's like, how many people have just been like dissuaded from getting a job because they're just like, you know, I'm so gay, nobody wants to hire me.
Well, it's been also illegal to fire somebody because they're Black. But if you look at the leadership of businesses and corporations, restaurants, bars, there's not a lot. It's not a reflection of the society at large. There's a scant amount of representation in diversity in the workplace.
Of women and people of color. Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, like 6 years ago, all the tech companies said that we're going to fight racism in the workplace and increase diversity. And 6 years later, nothing's really changed.
No.
So I'm hoping, and, you know, Kenan Thompson on Saturday Night Live, that's an ongoing kind of a joke or, you know, a reality that a lot of Black Americans are like, nothing's going to change.
Nothing will change.
And, you know, and I think I can sympathize with that cynicism, but this is major change. This is definitely something that impacts the lives of marginalized people. It impacts the lives of Black people. It impacts anybody, anywhere who ever had any doubt of coming out as gay or trans or bi or queer in their communities, at their workplace, because they were worried about getting fired. This will be something that is going to allow for a lot of people to tell their story and to come out. And I think, you know, in terms of the people who laid that foundation, I think, you know, a lot of playwrights, I think a lot of performance artists, a lot of bloggers, a lot of people who have told their stories on videos and podcasts and performance art events over the generations after generations, they have laid that groundwork for seeing LGBTQ people in the United States as human beings. And, you know, I always say, like, when you have to post on social media that you're a human being, you've lost the argument.
Wow.
You know, like, I'm a human being. And you're like, oh, shit. And part of me is like, you know, and I think that's where we have made some significant change. And we're, you know, every corny television show, every terrible and wonderful pop song, and all this culture that we have, like, you know, come out of the closet and put out those books and movies and those gay and lesbian film festivals, all this amounted to this point in time. So if you've been somebody who's fearlessly being themselves, this is as a result of you. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being out and proud.
That's right.
That's right. you know, we've seen the internet change a lot of that kind of stuff. It was, you know, before there's a lot of, and you know, we've had people write to us on the podcast. You're like, oh, I love listening to you. You know, it's so fun listening to your podcast and work because nobody knows I'm gay.
Until
and,
now.
And they're just like, I can't come out. You know, and for a lot of people, they still won't come out because even if you have some kind of legal protections, it still could be a hostile work environment for you. You could still have jerks that are going to do stuff.
It's illegal to fire someone for being black, but discrimination and racism still takes place even in your own neighborhoods and bars.
My value shouldn't be wrapped up in my talent. My value should not be wrapped up in Instagram followers. My value should be strictly based on the fact that I am a human being walking this earth right next to you. We built this. The election doesn't have to stand here on a loudspeaker and ask you for fucking permission to walk through the door. So you know what we're gonna do? The same way years ago, y'all wanted to say that you would take back voice out from the Southside trash. Well, guess what? Southside showed up. We're taking it back now. Drinks. I'm talking about, I want to see black managers. Okay? I want to see black people deciding who gets to come in and who gets to make the money. And while we're at it, we need to get a fucking black-owned bar up in this bitch. If y'all want to see a bar full of open, my name is Shea Coulee. I didn't come to play. I came to dismantle white supremacy.
That is Cooking with Drag Queens and RuPaul's Drag Race star, Shea Coulee, saying she didn't come here to slay, she came to dismantle white supremacy. Quoting the wonderful Big Freedia from her quote, I didn't come to play with you hoes, I came to slay, bitch. And yeah. Slay they are. So thousands of people came.
They say 20,000 people showed up for the Drag March for Change in support of Black Lives Matter protest to protest against violence against black people at the hands of police in Boys Town of Chicago.
It's known as the Drag March for Change. Mm. And it is the largest demonstration that's happened in Chicago in recent months. And next to the ones that have happened in downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it comes at a time when many events have been canceled during Pride Month in Chicago. So the march and the rally really gave people a chance to make their voices heard and come together.
It's great that they did it in the heart of Boys Town. The listeners of the podcast who have followed us for the past 15 years, we're now in our 16th season. We've been covering this pretty much since practically day one or two of the podcast on police violence and racism in Boys Town. And it's, you know, it's a problem there. It's our gay neighborhood. Queer people are over-policed. Black people, people of color, are definitely over-policed. And so it was this wonderful mixture of these drag queens leading many queer people, I would say, and allies in support of Black Lives Matter.
I remember one time when we gave the Vixen a ride to a club because we were filming her for Cooking with Drag Queens, and the police pulled us over.
We picked her up in Boys Town, and then she got into the back seat of the car, and we were just driving around the corner to another club, and the cops pulled us over, and we're just like, for no reason at all. At that point in time, we had a really shitty car, and I think that they thought that she was a sex worker and that we were picking up a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And then we're just like, no, we're picking her up and we're going to this other club and we're going to see somebody. And like, who? And so we name drop the person at the club and like, oh, yeah, we know them. I'm like, all right, well, you guys have a good evening. We're like, OK.
If you look back at the history of Stonewall, 51 years later, after Stonewall riots, 50 years after the first march in Chicago, mm-hmm. we're still dealing with police violence. We're still dealing with oligarchs and corrupt business owners and the mob and, you know, oppression of all kinds of shapes and sizes happening here in town. And that is something that's not really been resolved. And finally, it's being talked about mm-hmm. out in the public.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing is, like, I don't know if you're ever going to fully stop, especially in a town like Chicago, some of the corruption that's really going on and some of the police violence. I mean, we could, like, that's definitely something to work towards. But it's just the fact that you're speaking truth to power. It's freeing. You know what I mean? We're saying this is what the state is like, you know, because your secrets are the secrets that a city, a family, a relationship, those secrets are the things that can destroy you, is what people like to say. It's the thing that kind of eats you out inside. So when you can open it up to the fresh air, when you can shine a light on it, when you can talk about these things, that's when you just, it just changes everything. It changes the conversation and, you know, we can move forward.
It's important also not to think about the, you know, LGBTQ liberation, the Black Lives Matter movement as a monolith. That just like, you know, you and your family can't agree on what to have for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
All Black people are not going to agree on how to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. Not all LGBTQ people are going to agree on how to solve a problem. But they can agree on the goal, which is to have dinner or to, mm-hmm. you know, have workplace protection. And here's some of the goals that were discussed at that rally. One was to make violence against trans people a federal hate crime.
Mm.
The second one was to release from jail all protesters. But the most significant one, which I think actually taps on the racism that is inside our community, was the hesitation that the aldermen in Chicago, especially in the progressive neighborhoods, especially in the LGBTQ neighborhoods, were holdouts in passing what's called CPAC, a elected civilian police accountability council to oversee Chicago's police.
Mm.
Now, whether you want you align yourself with defunding the police or reforming the police, you can agree that the police funding for the police is humongous, and that as a consequence of protesting police violence, the police more than ever and more visibly than ever have shown their true colors in being hugely violent and oppressive, especially to Black people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the people that were organizing and speaking out at this event were talking about drag as a form of civil disobedience, that, you know, the everyday life that Black LGBTQ people face in this country is one obstacle that they have to overcome. And on top of that, fearlessly being themselves and expressing themselves in colorful and fabulous and distinguished and flamboyant couture costumes, garb, clothing is also in some ways, it's also painting a target on themselves, you know? And for me, it's like, we went to take pictures of the march and I even felt like I had to question a lot of what I wore because I didn't want to attract attention because I was worried that my own personal safety was at risk. And I saw, you know, I was really emboldened and inspired to see so much good drag actually
mm-hmm.
at this event, and seeing people like really marching down the streets and, you know, fearlessly being themselves and looking like they could easily be future winners of RuPaul's Drag mm-hmm. Race.
Lots of good signs, lots of good protest signs, lots of great chants, although there was one guy who had a sign, and there was an article that was buzzing around last week on the internet about people like, you know, it's great that you're in support of Black Lives Matter and equality, but, you know, can you please leave the signs that are fetishizing Black bodies at home? And there was one queen at the event that had a sign says, how did it go? It went something like,
don't open your mouth for Black cock and then keep it closed for Black justice.
And I'm just like, you know, okay, maybe at a drag queen march that could kind of be passing or as a joke or something like that. But if you're going to go outside of like a queer neighborhood, don't take a sign like that, you know?
But if you're going to hold a sign up at any place like that, I think the Chicago Drag March for Equality is the place to do it.
Now,
for change.
For most people are not going to agree with that. A lot of people are just going to be like, don't fetishize somebody's body like that. You know, this is about, I mean, you know, you're talking about a very serious subject. You're talking about people being murdered at the hands of the cops. And so it's hard to find, you know, humor in that. People aren't ready to receive anything like that. It's not something I would do.
But the important thing about drag sensibility, and you know, you can see that in films like Paris is Burning, is that drag's power stems from looking at the ridiculousness of violence and laughing at that demon in the face and saying, "You have no power here. Be gone."
Yeah.
And with your wit, with your sense of humor, with your strength and your resilience, you're able to overcome something that's impossible to overcome.
And you're always
others.
Yeah. And you're always going to come across somebody with a sign that's not going to be to your taste. Like when we were protesting Trump. Well, I'm downtown, you know, 2-3 years ago when he took office, and people are like, they've got signs that are like, Trump and Pence are fucking homos. And I'm just like, what? Or they had it in Spanish. They're calling them putos. And I'm just like, well, we don't mean it like they're gay. It means like they're asshole. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, somebody, how are we supposed to tell the difference? You know what I mean? You don't have to put down me or other people to put down Trump. Figure out some other way to say it.
What do you make of the free pizza that was passed around?
I'm pissed I didn't get any. So just tell people what we did is like we drove down and we caught the parade as it was coming towards us because I wanted to kind of like view it as it was coming. But also, too, I really need to social distance because I'm going to at some point in time in the near future see my mother who's 95 years old. So it's not I didn't want to be around people for a long time. And so I'm just like, we're going to go down there. Well, let's witness this. This is a very important piece of history, especially a piece of Chicago history. I want to see it. I want to be there for it. I want to show support because I believe in this cause. And so we went down there. We filmed some of it. We got to meet up with our friend Kevy, and we hung out with her and Daisy Pusher. But eventually, you know, the parade route was short. It was only like 7 blocks, and it's, you know, it's 20,000 people. And then they set up a little area to give speeches. And unfortunately, we were too far away from the sound system to hear them. So I said, you know what? Now is a good time to get out of here because I just didn't want to be around all those people.
Well, and a lot of the people who participated in the march left shortly thereafter because the sound system that they had, unfortunately, wasn't able to travel as far as they could. And you know, part of that is like with the speakers, you want to raise them up high.
Right.
And didn't have any kind of sound system for that. You know, for me, it's like, look, you know, people are going to criticize the organizers for this and say there was a lot of hubris or a lot of self-serving and I want to encourage young people to be activists. I've always said that the Rue Girls never, all they cared was their merch and their lines at these expos. And now they're getting politically involved and they're giving amazing speeches. And Shea Coulee is being compared to Malcolm X, you know? And you know, I think that's tying itself to the exaggeration and aggrandizement of drag. But who's to say that Shea Coulee could not become this amazing activist who could grow into that to become this groundbreaking, life-changing figure for people? And the people who are there organizing this stuff, they are going to be the activists of tomorrow. So, you know, encourage and nurture them and love them and forgive them for not doing things to your taste and open up space for Black lives to matter and to actually stick around and not be just a fad where, you know, corporations can put their little Black Lives Matter sticker and be like, it's the Black Lives Matter Skittles bag, you know?
But, you know, every 20,000 persons that was there is an activist. And if they can just activate other people to get on board and just, you know, this could really, it can just grow exponentially.
And I think that's what's great about this, you know, like even like World of Wonder just issued a statement on their social media saying that anybody who posts racist comments on their pages or Twitter accounts or Instagram or Facebook, whatever, will be banned immediately.
Yeah. And they also did something on All Stars that they did put something on there in support of Black Lives Matter, and this last episode was dedicated to Breonna Taylor, who would have just celebrated a birthday recently. And for listeners who don't know, she was murdered in her bed. The cops broke down the door for, you know, no reason, came into her home and killed her and someone else. And it's just like,
yeah,
why? So it's great. World of Wonder is stepping up and they're recognizing this. They're getting involved. You know, unfortunately, I don't think people have heard anything from RuPaul. I don't know if she's busy in her fracking mind or what's going on, that she hasn't really stepped forward and said anything. Or maybe she feels like as a public figure, she can't, or she's just waiting for the time is right. So I'm glad World of Wonder at least is coming forward.
Well, and Tyra Sanchez, not too long ago, she just said to World of Wonder and to fans of Drag Race and to anybody who wants to know anything about where she's at right now, says, leave me out of your bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Tag me on posts, right?
I allowed the negativity to consume me, boiling it inside and smiling through the tears. I became rebellious, though it empowered me. Many times I expressed myself without thinking things through. I reacted out of fear with anger. Neglecting the fact that I was wrong, I unleashed my anger upon anyone who crossed me, making them pay for old and new because I thought it made me feel better. I was angry, hurt, and lost. Then Tyra went on to perform at Vixen's Black Girl Magic show, among other gigs, but in March completely retired his name, deactivated all social media accounts, websites, and made a statement saying, this is the end of the road here. I will not be participating or performing as a drag queen anymore.
Do drag queens ever really die? Do they ever really tire? Don't they always come back?
There's always a little box of wigs and some makeup sitting in the attic. And then 5 or 6 years later, you know, India Farah is on Drag Race this season.
Season 5, yeah.
And she also famously issued a statement saying, I'm done with the toxicity of this show and the fans. And, you know, everybody who's not agreed or had disagreements with the audience of the show has felt the wrath of a very dedicated and very intense fan base for this program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think, you know, the creators of the show need to address. Mm. And part of it is like, there's a lot of money at stake. It's, you know, one of the top, if not the top, most popular cable television show.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
This is so wild. I just love it.
And so I'd like to see, you know, that being looked at or addressed. I think this is a step in the right direction. Again, this is Black Lives Matter manifesting itself, woman-festing itself, non-binary-festing itself in affecting how America sees everybody. And fighting for justice and thinking about how we unintentionally create space for racism, because we are part of that racist society. And even with the best intentions, sometimes we do and think and say racist things. Mm-hmm. And when someone calls us out or challenges us on it, we feel like we're on the defensive about it and we react negatively. And part of it is like, we need to think about how we talk about these things differently so we can be better people and actually fight racism and end it once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it possible? Is this, you know, human nature?
So the Chicago Pride Parade, which would have been the 50th anniversary this year, has been canceled due to the coronavirus, but that's not going to stop LGBTQ activists. So on June 28th at noon at Halsted and at the Belmont Red Line, basically, people are going to reclaim pride. And so they're going to do a Reclaim Pride March, and they're going to start there. And the route is not absolutely set in stone yet. So you can check the Facebook page for Reclaim Pride Chicago. And I'll update you, you know, in the next week or two of when exactly and where it's going to go or how it might end. But this is not going to have politicians. This is not going to have corporations. It's not going to have floats like that. This is going to be queer LGBT people out on the street protesting, putting trans visibility front and forward, and saying we need to work for change and intersectionality. With the black, it's not going to be a Black Lives movement protests, but there will be elements of supporting that in it for sure. And because, you know, it's all related and we're going to get out there and we're going to show people what's what.
Racism is a weed. You got to pull it out. You got to pull all the weeds that are tied to it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they sprout back up. Intersectionality, honey. Love it.
So for all you people who are like, there's no Pride Parade. Oh, yes. It's not a Pride Parade. It's a march. It's going back to the roots, you know. And it was
going back black to my roots where my heart can be found and my heart rings true. I'm thrilled with it.
Yeah.
Definitely wear your face masks, wear your face shields.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you
wear
know, one
a costume
thing,
if you want. Get your posters together.
Celebrate.
Don't do that. Don't do that black dick poster though.
Yeah. But leave that one at home.
Leave that one at home.
When you're meeting your friends, if you're out there, please learn from the Japanese, from Mr. Suzuki, who teaches the kids to bow to honor someone.
To
instead shake their hands, instead of hugging them, just bow to each other. Mm-hmm. It's such a nice gesture. And I would like to see more people do it.
I shook somebody's hand. I was like, I'll shake your hand. I'm about to wash it anyway. So I'm going to wash that filth right off, you know.
So Agina on All Stars last week, she didn't. This is a spoiler alert, so you can skip here if you'd like to. She didn't get quit. She didn't get eliminated. She quit the show. And the judges were like, you're right.
Well, she's like, send me home if you want to. And then everybody's just like, yeah, you're going home.
Agina issued a statement saying, I just want to say, I hope the next time that I'm surrounded by queens, directed at Miss Cracker, whether it's a local stage or world stage like All Stars, if a queen is feeling nervous, unsure of themselves, or losing confidence, that you should choose to uplift them instead of kicking them while they're down. We can make the choice to be genuine and sisterly, even in competition where there's $100,000 doulas on the line.
So what happened with Agina is like, the first couple episodes, she was like, felt like she was kind of like out of her element, right? And the girls let her know that. And they're like, you have to believe in yourself. If you're going to be an all-star, she's like, I know I have to believe in myself. And most of the time I'm like, I'm fine when I'm on stage, but there's just something about being here. You know, she was overwhelmed and the girls really kind of picked up on that. And they're just like, well, if you're going to be a star, you really have to believe in yourself. And she was just like, come on, give me a break. And so they sent her packing.
Yeah. You know. Poor Agina. You know, it's like she was such a sympathetic figure on the first season of Drag Race.
Yeah, we interviewed her.
Broke down on stage crying and revealing her HIV status.
Yeah, if you're a Plus member, you can go back and listen to that show. Just search Agina, it should pop up. And I found her infinitely charming and sweet and kind and loving and fun. And so it's sad to kind of see her kind of go out that way. But, you know, I think this will being on television will give her a boost to her career. And if people ever see any drag queen ever perform on a stage again, I hope they'll be able to see her.
Now, in Tennessee, the state capital in Nashville, there's been a lot of talk about racist monuments and monuments to the enemy, to the Confederates. And there's been all this talk about getting rid of them. And what are we going to replace them? And so
is it going to be me?
It's going to be Dolly Parton.
Yay! I guess.
There's actually talks about putting a Dolly Parton in the statue in the state capitol. And Dolly Parton usually says about that is like, good, there'll be two boobs in the state capitol now.
More boobs. You know, she has done so much for that state. I mean, she's just an icon throughout the world. And with Dollywood and what she's done for country music, they should just have statues of Dolly Parton all over that state.
Well, in terms, regardless of whether you like or dislike Dolly Parton's music, she's somebody who has donated a lot of her vast fortunes into literacy campaigns for children.
Yeah, she sends kids free books, right?
Yeah, and not only just free books, but like just laying a foundation and an economic system in, you know, underserved or poor communities where kids can discover and learn how to read, you know. Reading really is fundamental. And you know, I think that's part of our problems as Americans right now is that people may know how to order from a menu or read a stop sign, but they can't read a book and make sense of it.
Well, it's just the fact of, you know, it's making sense of it, but also too, reading forms the mind, mm-hmm. and it forms the ability to have complex thoughts. And so if you're not reading or learning, teaching kids how to read, and the kids aren't learning how to read it, you know, it's hard.
But I would say, like, even as adults, and I would speak for myself as mm-hmm. well, that we all have room to grow in the way that we read and how we read, and reading faster and reading books as opposed to websites. And, you know, like, social media, social engineering, and, you know, a lot of these social media sites are owned by Republicans, and they want to use it to divide and conquer. And, you know,
they want us fighting each other.
I said, if you're fighting with somebody, it's on Facebook.
Yeah, because you're rarely fighting with anybody in real life anymore. It's like, oh.
And so in a lot of ways, I think reading and putting a push and emphasis on reading, while it doesn't sound as exciting or fun, you know, every book can be an adventure. And part of that is encouraging and and inspiring people to read. Dolly Parton is somebody who's really dedicated so much of her life to that, to literacy. And God, I just can't even think of how many people's lives have been positively touched by Dolly Parton's reading initiatives. And so it's, you know, it's kind of weird because, like, everybody kind of jokes about it, says that underneath Dolly Parton's wig and costumes is, like, basically like this punk brunette woman with tattoos.
Well, it's tattooed sleeves is the rumor, right?
Yeah.
And so her hair is, like, long and black, except for the, she's got bangs or something. The front part is very blonde, right?
Well, at this point, you know, she's 78 years old and everything's silver.
Yeah, but
even down there, you know, she's got to dye it all.
Is she really 78?
78 years old.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
Make a statue of Dolly Parton while she still can show up to the unveiling.
Will it be a bust?
Somebody was commenting on J.K. Rowling about the sorting hat.
Oh.
She has a trouble with people who have been assigned Hufflepuff at sorting hat, but identify as Gryffindor. What do you make about J.K. Rowling sort of, you know, throwing out the window her legacy of her books in terms of diversity and inclusivity with this very negative and sad take on trans inclusivity?
Well, for people who aren't really familiar with it, it's been kind of coming on for a couple of years now that she's liked a lot of tweets by TERFs, that's trans exclusionary radical feminists, although some people don't like that term at all because
they're not radical and they're not feminist.
Yeah,
they're not, regressive and they're fascists.
Yeah, and so it's all, you know, it all stems down to what makes a woman, what makes a man, what makes somebody non-binary.
What makes a Hufflepuff a Hufflepuff, or right. a Slytherin or a Gryffindor.
Yeah, you know, and so it's like the sorting hat. So that's the weird thing about it is like the sorting hat will identify what they think you are, but you also have a choice in it too. Like Harry Potter, when he put it on, there was like, it really sensed that Slytherin in him because he could speak to snakes. He could speak to parcel. He could speak the parcel tongue, right? But he was just like, please let it be Gryffindor. Please let it be Gryffindor. And so the sorting hat was just like, you're Gryffindor. And so, like, he was happy.
But in the books, it's revealed that he's, you know, just like Luke Skywalker, he's pulled to the dark side of the Force.
Well, he has the dark in him, right?
Yeah.
He's got, like, a little bit of Voldemort in him.
And in the books, we start to reveal that, you know, evil isn't always what it seems. And
some people, like, appear like they might be evil, but actually they're good. But, you know, that's a common thing in any
fiction.
Kind of novel and,
sure.
or fiction. And so then eventually there was a couple more little tweets and people were like, see, we told you. Like, well, it could be kind of explained. She had her publicist explain something away. But then finally she just kind of came forward and was like, if you were born, you know, with a vagina, then you're a woman and nothing's ever going to change that. You could be a man and have surgeries or whatever, but you'll still never be a woman because it's like the whole process of being a woman. And she goes, you know, if I had, like 30 years ago when I was depressed and I had like a lot of anxiety, I really wanted to leave womanhood behind, but I couldn't. So, you know, part of me was just like, does she kind of regret not transitioning? Or there's some weirdness to that kind of thing. But also, too, you know, we think of gender, it's so complex, right? So we talk about it as a spectrum. There's people that are like, I'm non-binary, I'm a little bit of this, I'm a little bit of that. Then there's other people who are like, I was assigned female at birth, but I know I'm a man. So for them, like, their gender is very fixed, right? They're like, I'm that gender, even though I was assigned this gender at birth. You know, for her, she's just like, you are that gender you were assigned at birth. You can play dress up all you want, but you're always, you know, you're never going to be what that person is. And it's just such a narrow definition. It's just kind of like, why do you have to be so narrow about it?
Part of it is, you know, she's a very wealthy woman.
Yeah.
And we've discovered that people who are very wealthy are also very isolated in some regard. Mm. And she's not had the benefit of growing as a person in the past. How long has Harry Potter been a thing?
25 years.
So, you know, her mind is still stuck 25 years ago. The rest of the world has moved on. And, you know, when you're a wealthy person, no one tells you no. You know, would you like some more propofol? Would you like some more cocaine, Mr. Elvis? Yeah. You know, and they just give you the drugs and give you the bad advice and send you going in a bad direction. I don't want to take away her agency to make bad decisions and have a reckless and hurtful mindset. But, you know, it is something really astounding to see somebody who's put together this beloved children's book series and film series and world, all built on celebrating diversity and making room for ambiguity. And then at the end of her life and her career, she's like, I'm an asshole.
It really is just kind of like, what? You really want to hope for some kind of transformation, you know?
You know what it's like? Seven of Nine said, may all your dreams come true except one. So you have always something to strive for. But I always say it's like, you know, that hunger, that desire for growth, for adventure, is also makes us better people. It makes us need each other. May you always need somebody so you can negotiate and learn and grow.
Yeah. And I think, you know, she talked about having some problems early on, depression, stuff like that. And this is maybe just a symptom of it.
Maybe. Maybe she's just rotten.
I can't believe she's rotten. I don't want to believe she's rotten, but I'll accept that answer for now until she changes things.
What do you guys make of all this stuff? Yeah. We're always curious to know. People on social media, they have a lot of thoughts to share. We could go to the Facebook group for Feast of Fun. That's facebook.com/groups/feastoffun. And chime in and share your favorite memes or videos or ideas. Just don't use it as a place to put your, like, I'm performing next Tuesday at the club.
No spam. And also keep it upbeat if you can. There's some people that come in with, like, really horrible things. You're just like, no, please. Or things that, like, insult entire communities. And we're just like, what do you think of this asshole who said this about this community? And we're like, well, obviously he's an asshole and everybody here is going to be an asshole. Don't come here with your stuff like that. You know, keep it light, keep it fun, keep it, you know, it could be thought provoking, but you know what I mean?
It's called Feast of Fun. It's not called Feast of Responsibility or Feast of Conflict or Feast of Drama.
Well, Barbara Streisand has reached out to George Floyd's daughter and has made her a Disney shareholder. And there's a photo posted to Instagram of Gianna, who is George Floyd's daughter, holding some stock in Disney. Kanye West has also come forward and paid for some college. So it's, you know, celebrities are coming forward to pay tribute to George and make sure his child is taken care of.
Yeah, you know, and to anybody out there who's like, well, what about the other kids out there? That's back to the All Lives Matter reaction. You know, this family's gone through a lot. Let's let them be celebrated and loved and cherished. Save the whales does not mean screw the rest of the ocean. It just means you care about the whales. Black Lives Matter means that black lives do matter. And you want to address systemic police violence against Black Americans. Mm-hmm. That's all we're talking about here. It's, and for people who don't understand that, privately ask your friends about it. Ask for somebody that's, especially, you know, somebody who it's like, it's not black people's responsibility to teach you about that. But if a black person is willing to talk to you about it, listen, embrace that ambiguity. I think too many times people are like, well, it's not my job to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, well, what, I thought you were going to explain it to me, you know, and part of it is like, look, there's an ambiguity there that you need to embrace. And that is like, it's not somebody's responsibility to fix it. But if they're talking to you, you better listen. Yeah. God is trying to tell you something. Yeah.
And if you have an opinion against Black Lives Matter, I'm probably going to say it's 99.9%. It's going to be the wrong opinion against it. Like, I haven't heard anything, like, really anything that's, like, against Black Lives Matter that makes any sense at all or does not come off as racist.
Well, part of it, I think, you know, I've seen some people say, well, so-and-so disagrees with Black Lives Matter. And back to this idea, it's like, do you and your family agree what you're going to have for dinner? Then how can every single black person in America agree on everything? Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, a Supreme Court justice spoke out against LGBT equality in the workplace, Clarence Thomas, does not mean that he speaks or represents all black people or the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. And nor does he disqualify or discredit it.
And one thing I also am looking for, though, too, is like I have a lot of people that are sharing like Candace Owens videos.
Who is she anyway?
And they're like, well, you know, it's important to listen to both sides, or maybe she has a perspective. And it's never they ever like saying, like, writing down what her perspective is. They want me to watch like an 18 to 20 minute video.
I'm not going to waste my time on her.
It's disjointed. Her opinions are always garbage. They're right-wing talking points. They're very anti-black. But people are like, oh, it's all about self-responsibility. I was like, you know, people are self-responsible, right? It's just,
what does it mean to be self-responsible?
Self-responsible is like, okay, you wake up in the morning, you get a job, you clean your house, you do your things, you do that kind of stuff, right? People do that kind of stuff. Black people are under systemic racism. So all those little things that you're telling people to be self-sufficient about, it's 10 times harder for them. It's 1,000 times harder for them. Sometimes they don't even get to live to have that kind of self-resilience.
Well, you think about the coronavirus pandemic. Yeah. And how everything is now three times harder to do. Mm-hmm. That's what racism's impact is. Mm-hmm. Imagine a lifetime, generations of living under that type of stress and distress that, you know, I've experienced other kinds of trauma, but I imagine from listening to people speaking their truths about this, that that's what that impacts to. So it's about creating a space for people to breathe, to live, to grow, and to heal. And you know, that's all we're asking for.
And so, you know, you're always going to find somebody that's going to take those the rights talking points and put them in a pretty little package and try and sell them to people so that, you know, they can feel comfortable in their own backwards kind of views. If somebody could just send me like some links to like why she's such a terrible person or why we shouldn't pay any attention to her, it would make life a lot easier for me because I'm just kind of like, most of the time I'm just like, I'm not listening to her. It's garbage. You shouldn't pay attention to her. But what do you think about that? I'm like, no, I don't.
I'm more happy to talk about Diamond and Silk.
At least they're kind of entertaining.
They're kind of entertaining. They're kooky. They're weird and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there are these two sisters. One does all the talking. The other one does that, you know,
She chimes in. She makes the colorful statements.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's right. You know, you better believe it, sister. You know, like the one sister does all the talking and the other sister does like, you know.
She's the color commentary.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
And to me, I'm just kind of like amazed that they have this kind of like really intense relationship, right? Because they're sisters. And they work together.
They're thick as thieves because they are thieves. You know,
their parents ran a
herbal medicine scam or something like that. Yeah, they were also pastors. It was they're hucksters from way back.
Fox News commentators, and they just recently lost their job at Fox News. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn it, Fox News.
Aw.
I want to thank everybody for listening to today's show and you know, sticking with us all these years. I know that these are difficult times to live in. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of uncertainty. Together, we can overcome everything. You know, we would like for people to remember, and this is a bit of a cliche, is that all you need is love. But what is love? Love is your relationships to each other. Love is inviting someone to speak and listening to them. That's what we do in the podcast. Listening is a very active task of coming together of two lives through the art of speech. Mr. Rogers said, as far as I'm concerned, listening is a prerequisite of love. One of the most essential ways of saying I love you is by being a receptive listener.
Aww.
So make space for people in your life and invite them to speak and listen to them, whoever they are.
And hear them.
And hear them. And we thank you for making space out of your time and your life to listen to us. We feel your love, and we hope that you feel our love back to you.
We are there for you, and we are grateful that you are there for us. And one way you can be there for us is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk about these topics. We wouldn't be able to interview these wonderful guests if it weren't for you. We're also on Patreon, and you can join us there. We do some blogging there at patreon.com/feastoffun. Or if you'd like to make a one-time donation for Pride, you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
Yes, yes, God. One of the things that's really popular right now in our Facebook group is photos of famous entertainers run through those face swap filters to transform them into beautiful men or women. I gotta say, Beyonce, whew, baby, she looks good as a man and as a woman.
I shared one with Spock, Captain Kirk, and Bones. Captain Kirk is a girl, sure is sexy.
You sure are pretty, Captain Kirk.
Spock Lena, not so much.
Fearlessly go where no woman has gone before.
That's right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye-bye.